I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and this is Curious Mix. Listen in as we meet the people and explore the places and programs celebrating the arts and culture in our communities. Keep your ears open for these sounds and the stories behind them. It's a fine art printmaking studio. It's a gallery. It's a community center. No matter what you call it, Cat Head Press is a vital part of the Inglewood neighborhood on the city's Near East Side. The area prides itself on its locally owned small businesses, restaurants, and creative opportunities for residents. The multi-purpose Cat Head Press space is the brainchild of several printing artists who came to Indianapolis to get their MFAs from Heron School of Art and Design. Each grew up and got their undergraduate art degrees in U.S. cities that offered community-based studios, so they knew it was an idea that could work. But they did their homework first. They secured funding, created a smart business plan, and established an engaged board of directors before Cat Head Press opened in 2016. I went to Cat Head's second anniversary celebration, an underground art market hosted by the Cat Head creators and attended by a number of artists and Inglewood area businesses. And then I went back a weekend later to see and hear more about the art of silkscreen printing.
So I'm Dominic Sinibaldi. I'm the executive director here at Cat Head.
My name is Liz Wersbicki. I'm a co-founder and serve as the program director of Cat Head.
So I'm a professor at Heron. I'm also the print shop technician at Heron. So I run two print shops, which is kind of fun. A big reason we started this was, you know, there's a lot of printmakers that go to Heron. When they graduate, they don't have a print shop, you know, and not everybody can, like, set up, you know, a litho press or a screen printing shop in their house. So that was, like, a big sort of motivator for us to do this, was giving, you know, students that come out of Heron or any of the other schools in Indy, like, a place to continue to make work so that they, like, either stay in the city or keep making artwork. So that was a big part of our mission.
And it's just sort of grew into something much bigger than maybe even our initial thought. And specifically Inglewood, the community we landed in, just like spoke to us very strongly. And wanted it to be more than just a print shop, but a space where people could gather and share their creative thoughts. And then also teach people, you know, the printmaking process that we love so much.
Some people are always, when we teach, some students are afraid that they're going to, like, break the screen or something. Like, it can take a little bit of abuse. It's a commercial process, so.
My name's Nick Witten, and I'm an artist, and I run Sugar Space with Danielle Joy Graves. I was having a show at Storage Space, and I wanted to have t-shirts for that show, but I didn't have any, like, one, I didn't have the facilities, and two, I didn't have, like, the experience of, like, knowing how to print them myself and stuff like that. So I came here and had them make my t-shirts.
This acrylic-based ink that we use dries really fast. So if you actually leave your screen for too long without printing, it'll actually clog the screen up, as opposed to way back in the day when they could use oil-based inks. You could leave it all day. It wouldn't dry on your screen, but those are very toxic, so we don't use those anymore.
My name is Maria Iqbal, and I do a lot of zines, and I actually didn't get into zines until 2 years ago, and then Cat Head opened, and it kind of made it easier for me to plan things out to print. I use Cat Head for mostly silk screening, so, and I'm a big screen printer, so I really enjoy it.
You have to create a stencil that lets ink go through only certain areas and stops the ink from going through in other areas. So that's basically what the process is just printing with stencils.
My name is Michael Hofel. I serve on the board of Cathead Press. We kind of set out to start this, you know, arts community in a neighborhood that was kind of needing it. And it's come together maybe even a little better than I'd hoped.
We have a wide range of people that utilize the space, from more commercially minded printers to fine artists. You know, small businesses that want to get involved in some way to support, you know, their particular brand. We've developed relationships with Rabble Coffee and Ash & Elm, other small businesses in the community, and we sort of support them in their printing needs.
Most t-shirts, graphic t-shirts, are screen printed.
So it's printing on t-shirts, tote bags, basically anything that will hold ink. You can print on.
My name is Brooklyn Moore, and I'm with Ash & Elm Sutter. They make really cool posters for our events. That idea of like helping each other to make things great.
My name's Robert Young. I'm an illustrator. I make comics. I do animation. I'm a printmaker. I'm also a professor of illustration at Heron School of Art and Design. I work with Cathead to do illustration work for local businesses, and I also did their logo and some of their branding a few years ago when they opened up. More than a decade ago, I worked at a place in kind of further east of here, and there was just nothing over here. You know, it was, you know, stuff would come in and it would leave variety stores, and when you drove through the neighborhood, it was almost like people didn't live there. And I think when that happens, it's really easy to forget that people live in this neighborhood. So having this building with a, you know, with murals on it, with Tlaloli next to it, and with renovating the library next door, and this area looks now like people live here.
I am Jennifer Delgadillo. I'm the daughter of Carlos Hutchinson, the owner of Tlaloli. I think he really likes being surrounded by people he knows and people who he can learn from. Like, they go and talk to him about the art they make, the events they do. So to me, as an artist, like, having my dad be friends with a community of artists independently, like, that has nothing to do with me. Like, that's, to me, that's really awesome.
You get your next screen on, so each layer has its own screen and its own film. So when you're ready to do your second layer, you have to kind of set up your screen again. You have to set up a registration system so that those layers actually overlap correctly. Otherwise, you'll misregister your prints and they won't look too good. Some people like that, though, I guess.
Artists that are using the space print their own particular fine artwork, but they also print their business cards or, you know, material that supports their practice. People are interested in the hand and artist touch, maybe more so than, you know, going through a commercial printer to have that the quality that the artist will produce versus like a commercial business, printing business.
It's just really nice to feel something in your hand and like know that like you're the one that's printing this.
Mostly for the future, we want to just keep developing our programming, reaching out to more people and more neighborhoods, more communities, getting more people in the door, more like the general public. So sort of like that education aspect where we're giving people the tools to like do creative things and make their own artwork and express themselves.
Printmaking, you know, having this thing where people can make things that gives people agency and a thing to do. And a skill.
Some art spaces can maybe be a little too specific to really be available for just anybody from the community to come into, and we really wanted to have that connection with the community. So by offering so much variety, we're hoping to bring in more people who might not normally visit an art, you know, art-centered space.
I don't know what I'm gonna get, I guess, and that's kind of the magic behind it.
You'll find Cathead Press at 2834 East Washington Street, next to Pia Urban Cafe and Tlaloli Restaurant. Each week we bring you Making It, audio postcards that celebrate Indiana DIY artists. This week, WFYI's Melissa Davis speaks with a local artist and musician who's on a national tour with his band SM Wolf, playing from their new album, Bad Ocean.
My name is Adam Gross, and I'm making music. I rarely sit down to deliberately write songs. They usually come to me in some way or another when I'm doing something generally unrelated to art or music. So I will usually get a melody that pops in my head or a guitar riff that pops in my head. And if I have a guitar nearby, I'll play that. If not, I'll just sing a melody and put some lyrics to it and record it in my phone as a voice note. This is a Barclay 3/4 size, I think it's a student guitar from the early 60s. I had one of these. I studied abroad in France in college, and I bought one at a thrift store just to take to France so I didn't have to take something that I cared about too much or that was expensive. And I fell in love with it. And then when I was coming back, they wouldn't let me take it on the plane for some strange reason. So I just gifted it to a friend at the airport. And then a few years ago, one of my friends found one and bought it, and it's the same exact model and style. So he sold it to me after me begging for quite some time. Picked the absolute worst guitar to tune. Missing a knob. Close enough. Music is my preferred medium because I don't know how to do anything else. I have always wanted to make music since I was a little kid and stumbled my way into being able to do it and can't seem to stop.
I know you had a thought. I know I had a dream. Someday would I concede the right, the compromise is king. Not ready for July.
I played a show in San Diego once, and after the show, a woman walked up and said, "Are you from Indiana?" And I said, "Yeah, how'd you know?" And she said, "I could just hear it in your songs." And I still don't know what that means, but I guess it's in there somewhere.
You see, the sun came up to greet you. You swear it won't defeat you. You know you had it wrong. Yeah, you know you had it.
I keep going with my art because I legitimately don't know how to stop. Every time I find myself in a drought and I think I'm maybe gonna take some time off, something pops up, and then I'm on full steam again. My band is called SM Wolf, and we've been together for about 3.5, close to 4 years. We've gone through a lot of different lineup changes. At this point, it's kind of a loose collective of friends that whoever can make it, makes it. Our new album's called Bad Ocean. We started writing for it a couple years ago. Started recording a little over a year ago. So it's been quite a process. It's been a long time, but we're super excited for it to come out. Really happy with it. I feel like it's one of the best things I've done creatively up until this point. I'm really happy with the production of the record. I recorded it at my house and mixed it. We started tracking on reel-to-reel tape and then dumped it in the computer and edited and did some overdubs in there. But I feel like for me, recording-wise, it was definitely a little bit of a breakthrough. This record was really a team effort, so all the parts are really everyone's parts. We'll be right back.
Many of you have probably seen the movie Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? But you probably saw it in your home, on your couch, or on your iPad or your computer. And you know who doesn't really like you to watch movies that way?
Oh, get off my lawn.
The snickering man in the back. It's Matt Soucy, the host of Film Sociology on WFYI and also the host of the Blues House Party. And he joins us to chat with Matt about the blues or film. And obviously, we're talking about film and the way you prefer to watch it.
Okay. If you're stuck on in an airport or on a plane, I suppose, but there's a term I use called pop culture Atticus Finch. And I once wagged my finger at my daughter and I said, I don't ever want to see you watch a David Lean film on a phone. And she responded, Dad, who's David Lean?
Oh, no.
And I was like, don't talk back. I mean, my screen at home in my screening room, I look at it with shame. It's not big enough for David Lean. But that's my problem. Hi, how are you?
Well, by the way, David Lean, beautiful panoramic films
exactly.
That are just gorgeously, they were gorgeously produced and should be watched in a big format. But Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? It's been on every TV channel in the world.
Almost
it's a great movie. Though.
Almost
it's
as much as Shawshank. But yeah, it is. And for a lot of people, it is their favorite Coen brother film. And this is, of course, the Coen brothers' take on the Odyssey, only they set it in the Deep South in the 30s with George Clooney, John Turturro, and Tim Blake Nelson, among others.
To get back to his wife and kids, Ulysses Everett McGill will do anything.
Hey, any boy, Smitty.
But he's about to get off on the wrong track.
And it's fun and goofy, and the music's great. And yeah, some people saw it in the theater, but I think it gained a huge life on video and somewhere on television right now. It's running.
And this, I think, was released in 2000.
Correct.
So it was at the time it was precarious time in society, and so it made people laugh and think and. Kind of, it's very heartwarming, actually, too, as well as very funny.
It is very funny, yeah. And you don't have to have experienced reading the Odyssey to appreciate this, although it does help.
You two are just dumber than a bag of hammers.
This is going to be shown on July 20th and 21st at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin, Indiana. It's worth the drive. I think all art is worth driving for. And it's going to be at 2 and 7:30 p.m. And it's also going to be a 35mm print. Now, there's a lot of theaters you will get the digital copy or a download, and there's nothing wrong with that. But the fact that they got a 35mm print, I'm sure it's in good condition. So it goes back to the old school ways of seeing it on actual film in an actual theater with other actual people. So, I mean, this is going to be a fun afternoon or evening, depending on your choice.
And talk a little bit more about that 35 millimeter. If we've never seen a movie done that way, how do we know?
Well, 35 millimeter is the regular film that we have been known to see. We were talking about David Lean films. A lot of his stuff was shot on 70 millimeter, which is wider. Of course, 8 millimeter, I don't know what movies you were watching on those, but they are considerably thinner. So it's just the width of the film itself. So, but again, everything is much more digitalized now. We don't have as many. You've seen, if you remember from the old days of the movie theater, the big canisters with the films in them. We don't have those much anymore.
So this is a great opportunity to see the movie done in that way.
Exactly.
It was also kind of a breakthrough movie for that Americana music.
Yeah, I would say that the soundtrack to Oh Brother, Where Art Thou was probably at that time the most influential film soundtrack since Pulp Fiction.
Mm.
Quentin Tarantino's, of course, wonderful mishmash of, I mean, he just picked whatever he wanted and made it cool and made it work. And it was okay to have Johnny Cash and Al Green and Dick Dale, and I'm dropping names excessively. But what Oh Brother did was, yeah, it kind of broke the barriers because there's gospel and country and blues and bluegrass. And, you know, I still believe in going to record stores to find records, but sometimes, especially back then, the labels were a bit misleading and a bit choking at times. So the fact is that all of this, and yeah, Americana, you know, singer-songwriters are now considered Americana. Roots is now considered Americana. So the fact that this soundtrack, a wonderful soundtrack that covered a lot of ground, around. It won the Grammy for Album of the Year. So this was basically a soundtrack compilation. But and the fact is that their version of Man of Constant Sorrow actually charted the country charts.
Maybe your friends think I'm just a stranger. My face you never see no more.
It's still a hugely influential soundtrack and opened the floodgates as far as people can play and mix and match. And I think we're all the better for it.
So a good reason to go listen, a good reason to go watch, and of course the biggest question of all, what's the popcorn like at the Art Crowd?
Hopefully with real butter. Now get off my lawn. But yeah, I will take real butter over oil any day. Hopefully you will as well.
Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you.
To come on Curious Mix. Some like the heat.
The special of the sandwich is when you flame the meat.
And some don't.
It's not easy. Everybody's very patient, though, with each other, so that helps.
I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and you're listening to Curious Mix. I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and this is Curious Mix. Immigrants from Myanmar, also known as Burma, make up one of Indiana's largest immigrant populations. The country's eight major ethnic groups were highlighted at the 2018 Indianapolis Asia Fest. Curious Mix contributor Carter Barrett was there.
Teenagers walk across the stage at the Burmese fashion show. They wear different outfits to represent each region of Myanmar. Some of the outfits are colorful and elaborate, others more simplistic.
My name is Elizabeth, and my partner Bianca and I are representing Gaya. My name is Gavin Noy, my partner is Daniel, and we're from Gaya.
Here at the Indiana State Museum, the 11th annual Asian Fest spotlight country is Myanmar, also known as Burma. A country located in Southeast Asia near India, which has been in the news a lot lately because the Rohingya, an ethnic and religious minority, are fleeing persecution. Citizens of many different ethnic groups in Myanmar have immigrated and sought refugee status for decades, including the more than 20,000 living in Indiana. Asian Fest leaders say they chose Myanmar because of the large immigrant community in Indianapolis. But with dozens of languages and regional differences, it presents a unique challenge.
We have eight major ethnic groups in Burma. Each group has their booth here where we show our tradition and we show our information here. Karenese are here, Rakhine, Arakan, Xians, Kachins also.
This is the Burmese Association Community Initiative, or BACI, Chairman Dr. Ro Ding.
I hope more Indianapolis Hoosiers will know much more about Burmese population here, and also they will know more about Burma. So it's like culture exchange also, and I think we can build understanding, mutual understanding, people to people.
Ding is one of the first wave of immigrants to Indiana, a majority Christian ethnic group in Myanmar that fled persecution. Nearly 80% of immigrants of Myanmar in Indianapolis are Chin refugees.
Yeah, I escaped from Burma when my father and brother were arrested by the military regime. I escaped into India.
9 years later, he received a scholarship to come to the U.S.
I was amazed. I was very touched when I landed in that very freedom country. And when I saw the people are very welcome, and very sincere, I was really, really happy. And I'm very proud to become the citizen of Indianapolis. Yeah.
For a younger generation of Myanmar immigrants who arrived to the U.S. as kids, as well as second-generation immigrants, Asian Fest is a way to learn about their own culture.
So I had a pink headband on and a white shirt and like baggy black, like black pants with white socks.
This is high school sophomore and fashion show model Byak Thar. He moved to the U.S. with his family as a child.
I really like learning about my culture and stuff because I didn't really know anything. Because as soon as I was born, I came here and I don't really remember anything about my country. So I try to learn more about it every day. Like learning about the 8 major ethnics, which I didn't know about until this year.
And chairman from BACI, Ding, says the interaction of the 8 major ethnic groups in one room isn't something that happens much in a country the size of Texas.
This kind of gathering is very important. We are founders of the Union of Burma. So inter-ethnic encounter, inter-ethnic gathering is very important so that we can build unity among the ethnic groups. And because of this unity, I hope we will achieve democracy and equality and peace in Burma.
For Curious Mix, I'm Carter Barrett.
Weather is always a challenge for outdoor art events, even those that have been around for a while. The Talbot Street Art Fair in Indianapolis is one of the oldest juried shows in the state. The 2-day show in early June takes place in the Heron Morton neighborhood and attracts artists and visitors from across the country. But what happens when temperatures soar? Curious Mix contributor Bob Williams sweats it out for us.
It's about 10 o'clock on Sunday morning, and according to Weather Underground, it's already 85 degrees. And we are headed to the Talbot Street Art Fair. I'd like to find out how in the world the artists who display in these conditions handle it. And let me hit the air conditioning as I'm on the way out. Like all art fairs, Talbot has its share of pottery, jewelry, and durable yard art, but it also has its share of photography, oil and watercolor paintings, and other fine art which could be sensitive to extreme weather conditions. Jason Goslin, you Yes. are a photographer?
Yes, I am.
And where are you from?
I'm from here in town, Indianapolis.
It's been oppressively hot, and your artwork here is photography. How does your artwork handle the heat?
Well, I can't have it in direct sun. Everything's under glass, so the glass will heat up the prints and they would delaminate. So I keep them out of the direct sun, keep them under the awning shades as best I can. And that keeps them protected. Other than that, they do pretty well.
And how does the photographer do?
Oh, yeah. I do the same thing. I keep under the awnings, keep in the tent, try to keep in the shade. I've got a nice beach umbrella on my chair, and I drink a lot of water.
This is Gail McCoy from Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. And Gail, your artwork is paper collage.
Well, I do everything I can to protect it. So it's water resistant by the time I'm finished with it. So that helps as far as humidity. And what I've noticed is there isn't any wrinkling, but some of the pieces are a little tacky from the spray that I use. But once it gets in your air-conditioned home where you can enjoy it, it's perfect.
And how do you as an artist handle this kind of heat?
Well, I have to say this is the hottest. We spent the winter in Florida and we're doing shows every weekend. It never got this hot or this humid. So it's not easy. Everybody's very patient, though, with each other, so that helps.
I'm Lori Kelly, and originally from Chattanooga, Tennessee. It is very hard on us. I mean, we're out here normally before the show opens in the morning. We're here well after the show closes, taking down in the heat. So it's many hours, you know, setting up, taking down in hot weather, and it's really grueling.
From the Talbot Street Art Fair and headed to the air conditioning of my car. For Curious Mix, this is Bob Williams.
It's time to perk up our palates with a little help from Yelp, the online community of ordinary eaters who know where to find the tastiest places in town. One of their latest raves is the Peruvian Lomo Saltado sandwich from Don Juan V's Sandwiches.
My name is Valente Villegas, and the name of the place is Don Juan V's Sandwiches, Peruvian Sandwiches. The name of the popular sandwich is Lomo Saltado, and the ingredients is beef, salt, black pepper, onions, tomatoes, and cilantro. How I prepare, I cut the meat every morning, and the meat is the traditional meat they use in Peru. The special of the sandwich is when you flame the meat, that's when you get the flavor on the lomo saltado. That's why they call lomo saltado, because you flame the meat. I start sauteing the meat so that I can get flame, so the meat get a flavor on it. That's one of the traditional sandwich in Peru. It reminds me of my country. It reminds me that I'm not in the United States, I'm in Peru.
Don Juan V's Sandwiches and Peruvian Cuisine is located at 3720 East Raymond. It's near the Garfield Park neighborhood in Indianapolis. Just ahead on Curious Mix, it's all in a name.
There's something curious to me about the fact that this city's namesake and the state's namesake is very much underrepresented in the city's architecture and public spaces.
I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and this is Curious Mix. I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and you're listening to Curious Mix. Sound Expeditions is an audio soundtrack of Indianapolis, created by local arts enthusiast Michael Kaufman. He asked a variety of musicians to interpret a part of the city using original music and natural sound. Curious Mix contributor Kyle Long introduces us to composer Rafik Bhatia. He's guitarist with Sun Lux. He decided to look into the history of the word Indian and how it is and isn't part of the name of the city and the state. His sound expedition is called In Name.
Well, I mean, really, in my mind, the site of this monument is just the city at large. And it actually speaks not only to the city, but the state. And it has to do with the word Indian in Indianapolis and in Indiana. Because, you know, again, growing up here and not hearing too many things that felt like they referenced people like me or my identity, I would always be taken aback when I would encounter something that did. And of course, in this situation, the reference is to Native peoples, but there's something that jumped out about it to me anyway, mostly because of how we're united through that kind of racism. There's something curious to me about the fact that this city's namesake and the state's namesake is very much underrepresented in the city's architecture and public spaces. And so this piece called In Name was an attempt to get people to step back and sort of think about why the city is called Indianapolis, or to remember that the interaction between the settler colonials of Britain and America, you know, early America, interacted with Native peoples in a certain way, and that ended up being kind of the drive to name the city that has now been almost entirely scrubbed clean of that history.
Does a poem inspire a visual artist like this? Here's Curious Mix contributor Terry Border.
Okay, here's a poem by Carrie Shipers called Mother Talks Back to the Monster. Tonight I dressed my son in astronaut pajamas, kissed his forehead and tucked him in. I turned on his night light and looked for you in the closet and under the bed. I told him you were nowhere to be found. But I could smell your breath, your musty fur. I remember all your tricks, the jagged shadows on the wall, click of your claws, the hand that hovered just above my ankles if I left them exposed. Since I became a parent, I see danger everywhere. Unleashed dogs, sudden fevers, cereal 2 days out of date. And even worse than feeling so much fear is keeping it inside. Trying not to let my love become so tangled with anxiety, my son thinks they're the same. When he says he's seen your tail or heard your heavy step, I insist that you aren't real. Soon he'll feel too old to tell me his bad dreams. If you get lonely after he's asleep, you can always come downstairs. I'll be sitting at the kitchen table with the dishes I should wash and crumbs I should wipe up. We can drink hot tea and talk about the future, how hard it is to be outgrown.
We never lose those monsters in the closet, do we?
No, we don't. No, we don't. I think, I like this poem because it's, it treats a serious subject, about the mom knowing the son's not going to be a young boy and tell him all his fears and she will be outgrown to a certain extent at some time, but then they add the monster. The writer Carrie adds the monster and makes it humorous, something that I can laugh at, but I can also recognize that I have that fear of being outgrown, unneeded by our daughter.
But you also, in your art, can take objects that maybe might make people feel afraid and always turn them into kind of fun, acceptable
objects. Right, yeah. Well, the book I'm making right now, and I'm really excited, it's a children's book, but I try to put some dark things in there because I think kids like to be just a little bit scared, so I'm trying to make funny images, and that kind of reminds me of this. You're right about this poem. It's I try to make funny images and a little bit scary, you don't know which to do, be nervous or laugh at. That's one of my favorite kinds of humor.
And you do it very well.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
That's Terry Border. He'll be back next week with another poem to scare us silly. You might not consider the sound of a sewing machine to be music to your ears, but artist Rachel Hedges does. Curious Mix contributor Joy Hernandez takes us to the hands-on playground Hedges calls her studio.
Just so crazy because, I was a music major, and so, sound has always been, just, part of my education. So it's really cool to, see that context of the sound part of this because it's so visual,
She studied at the University of Indianapolis to sing, but now Rachel Hedges is speaking in the rhythm of her sewing machine, churning out her latest creation.
When I graduated, I didn't want to make any music at all. I was just done. I just wanted to be quiet, I wanted to, be able to do something that was not dependent on people watching me. And then this was therapy after college, I think. It was nobody's going to judge you. You don't have to pass a test. You can make whatever crazy thing you want to make.
In this case, it's Dolores, a little stuffed monster, the star of Hedges' Bibito toy line.
She's a librarian, and so that comes with a lot. And she's a huge introvert. And so it looks a little socially awkward. Quirkiness. She's like a dreamer personality, very imaginative, obviously. She likes to read. She daydreams. But she's still kind of a party girl. It's funny. She's a spinster, although she might not be very old. But she, she's kind of like the dowdy librarian. But she likes to go out with her girlfriends. She loves to drink Guinness. And she can get a little, she'll get a little tipsy. She really likes cowboys. She's been known to read a romance novel, this isn't just me. I just want to say that, it's not like I figured this out. This Dolores's friends and people who know Dolores have told me these things about her. You might know something about her that I don't know.
There are little piles of the potato-shaped plushie all over Hedges' work table. Thrift store sweaters make up the bulk of the material, with little circles for eyes or spikes for arms and legs cut from contrasting colors.
There'll be these beautiful sweaters that somebody gave away because they're I can't look at this sweater anymore. I loved it, and now it's ruined. And I'm I'll take your sweater.
Hedges has been creating the Dolores pattern for nearly a decade, and for the last 3 years in her workshop at the Circle City Industrial Complex. Tree branches and Christmas lights hang from the ceiling. Inspirational pieces adorn the walls. The atmosphere feels like a magical natural habitat for creatures like Dolores and her friends. After years of structure through education, this feels like home, working in an activity taught to her by her mother. Hedges is free to create whatever she dreams up. Bonus points for when creating helps clear a messy desk, like a little red triangle lizard, one of her weirdos, as she described them.
It's made out of paper, actually, that I found on my desk, and paper clips, sewn very little bit of embroidery on the paper, some beads, some faux fur, it wasn't rehearsed. It just was born, you know? So I think I really liked that contrast from the classical music world, which is all about following rules and, like, doing things the right way in a set amount of time, where this is, like, infinite time. I could spend forever, you know?
In small hands or in larger hands, Dolores tends to wear pretty well.
Some kids, like, just love it. They get it, and they'll look at her, and they'll, like, know, and they'll just know. Like, it's funny. I have a nephew who is 7 now, and he calls her Lawrence, but, like, he knows her. He just has, I don't know if he just likes her because we like her or what, but, like, I've seen other kids that do that, too, and they just like her. And also sometimes adults, like, and that's the magical thing for me.
Through her Bibito creations, Hedges has embraced the concept of throwing out the known to do what you love.
With any kind of artistic pursuit, it'll change, you know, you'll go on a trip or you'll have some kind of life event that will cause you to totally create things differently. And it never stops changing. I mean, maybe for some people it's not the same, but I think ideally you just keep growing and you keep evolving and your whatever work that you do grows with you.
Meanwhile, little Dolores takes over Indianapolis shop by shop. For Curious Mix, I'm Joy Hernandez.
Given you plenty to hear this hour, but this next story requires your eyes.
This weekend, let's identify a classic Northern Hemisphere constellation. I'm Matt Pelser, and this is your Weekend Sky Report. We all know about the Dippers, Ursa Major and Ursa Minor, the Big and Little Dippers. We know about them because they're out every night. But there's another bright Northern Hemisphere constellation we should know about. Swirling around the northern sky year-round are the 5 bright stars that make up Cassiopeia. Cassiopeia is popular with amateur astronomers because it's large, bright, and the main reference point for several deep sky objects. Things like Double Cluster, the Andromeda Galaxy, Messier's 52 and 103, both open star clusters, and the Owl Cluster, also known as the ET Cluster. Yes, that ET. It's called that because apparently it looks like the movie character. I don't really see it, but I do enjoy finding it when I can. Anyway, this weekend, you can find Cassiopeia high to the northeast after sundown. If you were to draw lines between its 5 bright stars, it would look kind of like a wonky lowercase w on its side. Interestingly enough, if we were to take a quick trip to nearby star system Alpha Centauri, our own sun would appear in Cassiopeia. It would turn the W into a bit of a squiggle and would appear to be by far the brightest star in the constellation. Cassiopeia has inspired novels, movies, TV shows, even songs. If we get a clear night this weekend, maybe look up for a little inspiration of your own. I'm Matt Pelser. Happy skywatching.
Curious Mix is made possible in part by the Arts Council of Indianapolis. Brandon Meeks composed and performs our music. And this Curious Mix was created by
Roxana Caldwell,
Sarah Neil Estes,
Matt Pelser,
Kyle Long,
Terry Border,
Matthew Sosi,
Melissa Davis,
Joy Hernandez,
Carter Barrett,
Bob Williams,
and me, Jill Dittmeyer. We'll be back again next week with more Curious Mix.